Welcome, welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Fantasy Baseball Podcast with your hosts, Matty Wood, Matthew Davis, and the Roto-Gut, Vlad Settler.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. This is our fourth episode of the 2023 season. I'm your host, Vlad Settler, along with my co-host. They call him Matty Wood. And he is now without an underscore, any underscores on Twitter, because he got the whole name to himself, Matthew Davis. Matt, how did that go down?
It's quite the story, actually. The individual that had just at Matty Wood on Twitter is a professor in Newcastle at a university. I forget the name of the university, but
can you please tell us his name? This is the best part of the story.
Yeah. So his name is Matthew Wood. And my name is not Matthew Wood. My name is Matthew Davis. And there's a whole story behind the nickname that I received, Matty Wood, in college. It's basically similar to Manny Wood. But anyways, I contacted this professor back in 2019 and asked him if he'd be willing to either swap names with me, Twitter handles on Twitter, or if maybe he would be interested in maybe a small compensation. Eventually, he got back to me a year later in 2020. After I had initially emailed him, he got back to me. And then on Twitter, was where he messaged me. And then he told me that he wasn't willing to give me his Twitter handle. But he was really nice and kind about everything and explained to me why he wanted to have his profile or whatever, et cetera. And then lo and behold, a few years later, he reached out to me and said that he wanted to keep all of his Twitter, or not Twitter handles, all of his social media platform names similar or all the same. And he wants to be Dr. Matt Wood, which is obviously more professional than using, you know, Matty or Matty Wood. So he's now Dr. Matt Wood, and I am just Matty Wood with no underscores in it. It really feels good after a four-year battle of, I wouldn't say battle, because he was super friendly and cool about the whole thing. And then finally just thought about reaching out to me, and he was like, I'm changing my name, so do it now. I was like, thanks, dude.
Well, if it was Professor Heberlig over on the East Coast, I'm sure he would have done it for a DC entry, a 150. That would have been funny.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, and my dog barked right there. That was Murray. So he's excited as well.
That's awesome.
So yeah, I texted you immediately. I was like, I can't believe it. It felt like I'm shedding a little bit of weight, you know, and it's just more simple. And I hated giving people, like, if I was a guest on a pod, and they're like, well, give you plug your Twitter handle. And it's like @_, you know, it's just too much. So
there's actually a Vlad Settler on Twitter. I actually don't think he's on there anymore, because I think he got in trouble with the law or something like that. But he's like, I think it was like 10 years ago. He was a wrestler, like a high school wrestler, and, you know, just like, you know, total, like, you know, bro type kid. And yeah, so, you know, before, you know, Gut really was, you know, when it was baby Gut, I guess you could say, Vlad Settler was the other Vlad Settler was a little bit more prominent on social media, but I have since taken over and squashed that kid.
Is there still RotoCop? I know that was a thing at one time. Was that what it was?
RotoCop, I mean, something like that. It's something to do with the one time I snitched on somebody in some best balls. But RotoCop is actually an ally, thankfully.
Yeah.
I actually know who RotoCop is.
Funny.
So here we are. Today is the middle of February. February 15th evening is when we're recording, and probably we'll hear this on Thursday and beyond. We waited a day for the sake of Valentine's, and I'm getting ready to take off to the Fantasy Sports Gaming Association conference, the winter conference, and I'll be there drafting, representing FTN. It's a 14-team league. It's been going on for, you know, a couple of decades now. And I used to participate in it with the godfather, Charlie Wiegert. Now I'm here basically with my own team. So I drew the 10 pick. It's, you know, standard 5x5 roto, but it'll be kind of my first taste of drafting something live, which will be a lot of fun. I know Jeff Erickson will be in the draft. I think he's drafting on the other side of the table, some other folks I know. So that should be fun. So I'm getting ready to leave for Vegas while you guys are listening to this pod.
And if people don't know, you live in Southern California, so your drive is about 3.5 hours.
I'm flying, though.
Oh, you are flying. Yeah. Oh,
just because then it's, you know, I live not far from the Burbank Airport, and then it's basically just
nice. I'm always used to you rolling with Jenstad and Erickson to Vegas.
Yeah, whenever I can, if I can fly, I would. Cool. But I also would never miss a chance to drive with Scott. And by the way, Scott never lets me drive. He has to drive whenever we go to Vegas.
Course.
Said, dude, I'm driving this year. He's like, nope, I got to drive. He goes, if you want to roll, you know, come with me. Otherwise, I'll see you there. Bastard.
Well, I've mentioned it each week, and I'm going to continue to do so. We are now only 5 weeks away from our high stakes fantasy baseball drafts in Las Vegas. So very excited.
Yeah. And obviously a lot of cool stuff. I'm going to plug things real quick before we get into the nitty gritty today, but FTNFantasy.com is the site to find everything that you need. FTN pod is the promo code. If you have not yet subscribed, this week we've released a second version of the underdog best ball draft rankings, updated the top 500, and the 12 team VDP cheat sheet came out, the one that you had last year that is formatted nicely per round in Excel. So I'll be updating that once a week. And then obviously Maddie's Juice with a Squeeze and everything else. So make sure you check us out, ftnfantasy.com/MLB. You can throw in a /tools if you want to have the page that basically is a quick way to get to everything. So here we go. Today is the outfield tiers episode. We're gonna break down a whole bunch of them. There are about 125 guys that stretch out from the beginning of round one all the way to the end of round 30 of 15 team draft. So we're talking a player pool of 450. Of course, the guys towards the end are not going to be really applicable in 12 team formats. But you know, we're gonna kind of run through the pool tier by tier and just get a feel for what we think. So just kind of sort of kicking things off. You've done obviously a bunch of drafts. Do you have a specific approach to outfield? I know we're talking a little bit about it before the show, how you almost have to a little bit, because if you're just kind of blindly going, you can end up, you know, kind of overloaded really early, or almost in the reverse if you're waiting too long. So you almost have to be mindful of it during the draft. What's your experience with it this season?
That it's a slippery slope, kind of like you explained. I think that you need to be conscious about picking your spots. There's a lot of pockets or tiers that we're going to be discussing, and where they're going in drafts. And, you know, there's a lot of different ways to go about building your teams and roster constructions, because there will come to a point where you're just basically taking your fourth or fifth outfielder because you need X category the most, right? So you kind of pivot towards somebody because of a need. But once we go through these, we're going to notice that I think that there's quite a bit of mispricing still. And that includes the high end of the outfielders that we're seeing in ADP. And then obviously going down where I think some guys are just being mispriced, potentially going a little bit later than I think they should be. So, but when it comes to how I like to put my outfielders together, I definitely want to get one or two within the top, just looking at the outfielders themselves, within the top 25. I'd like to have two of those guys. And then from there, I can maybe just piece together, you know, the targets that I have, when looking at the pockets or the tiers, et cetera, and where they're going in drafts.
Yeah, it really is a big puzzle piece. And one of the things that I like to do, especially when I get towards my main draft, is really just make a big targets spreadsheet. By this point, I've just done so many drafts and know the player pools pretty well. And, you know, many of us can just go ahead and essentially draft, without anything really. But obviously having something in front of it is nice, and it's sort of help guide us. But if you have all the positions and vertically in the rounds, horizontally aligned, you can almost figure out who you're going to want to draft and where, you know, sort of what areas you want to skip in drafts. And we'll talk about it in a minute, but I know there are a couple of pockets of specifically outfielders early that I don't necessarily love, or there are other things that I'm looking to attack in those areas. And of course, you know, maybe that could change between now and the end of March, but that's just kind of the way I've been drafting, and then outfielders that I like later. But we all need to at least have our own plan of attack when we're going after each position. And obviously outfielder is this big beast, not quite as big of a beast, I guess, as starting pitching per se. And starting pitching is almost more important in a lot of ways because, you know, obviously bad starting pitching can really wreck you, and it's essentially half your roto categories. But outfield is a place where you could really nail a lot of gifts, right? There's something really special about having a set of four guys, maybe even five sometimes, that you're not even worrying about streaming over the course of the season. You don't have to worry about getting Jock Peterson out or having to play him because lefties are coming up on the schedule, where things are just really tight. If you draft well and you hit some of those late round guys, you don't really have that problem, and you almost have a set it, forget it situation, which is usually really nice to have.
Yeah, and we're also seeing some of those late round guys, or even some of the guys that we picked up off FAB that were really useful for our winning teams. They returned, let's even say $10 or more in value, wherever you're looking at your return on investment regarding a rotisserie league, et cetera. And I think that recency bias is overpricing quite a bit of guys that we're going to be getting into. So, it's an interesting market right now, to say the least. I'm excited to get into it because I think that we'll have some choice takes along the way.
So the first tier is very simple, and I almost call it a 1A. But essentially half of your first round of 15 teamers, and even more so in 12 teamers, are outfielders. So there's a good chance that depending on where you're picking in the draft or what KDS you draw, or if you're a non-NFBC league, like what position you're picking from, good chances are you're starting with an outfielder. So you almost have to be mindful of when you're going to grab your second and your third and in relation to other positions. But that first sort of 1A group, which is your first rounders, a lot of them come in the early part of the draft. So obviously Ronald Acuna Jr., Julio Rodriguez, big bopper Aaron Judge from last season, another big bopper Jordan Alvarez, his teammate Kyle Tucker, and then Juan Soto and Mookie Betts, couple of current West Coast guys. So that's your 1A group. 1B group are guys that are going basically in the second round of 15 teamers, and those are Fernando Tatis Jr., who we discussed on the MI middle infield episode last week, and then of course the legendary Mike Trout himself. So it's a nice group, nice base. But I wanted to just kind of throw a curveball right off the top. Is there anyone that you're just not interested in drafting among these outfielders? Is there somebody in that first tier that you're like, you know, I'm not quite comfortable with? I know they're all fantastic players. They can all potentially be the number one overall guy. But is there one of these guys that you're just, you know, outside of, let's forget Tatis Jr. and Trout, is there anyone from that first batch that you're just not into this season?
It's not about not being into them, but once we get to our live events, there's probably going to be a cutoff right around Kyle Tucker where I say I'd like Garrett Cole now, or Corbin Burns, or whomever. Likely Garrett Cole if he was available. So for me, I also think real quick with Kyle Tucker, I know that last week we talked about where we have the top five with Jose Ramirez being the fifth person. I think Kyle Tucker kind of needs to be in that discussion and conversation as well. So for me, it would be a big six. And I'm really tempted to even put Kyle Tucker above Aaron Judge and Julio Rodriguez. And is the concern that Kyle Tucker isn't on roster resource hitting second because Michael Brantley's always hit second in Houston. I know that that's always degraded his runs, part of his counting stats with the runs, as we've seen in the past. But yeah, man, I think that he definitely should be considered. It should be, if you're looking at, so to speak, a top five, I think it should be a top six with Kyle Tucker. But then after him, I don't have any qualms with any of these other guys. The three are Jordan Alvarez, Juan Soto, and Mookie Betts. But yeah, I think I'm probably going to split my hairs and likely go with a pitcher there. I don't, that's probably where I end up leaning. But you never know. If I end up having one main event and I've already got, I started with a starting pitcher there, then maybe I do go with Jordan Alvarez. But yeah, more times than not, I'm probably stopping at Kyle Tucker and then maybe even going to another position, right? But looking at the outfielders alone, I likely go with one of those top two pitchers over Alvarez, Soto, and Betts.
Yeah, for me, there's no true justification. It really is just instinct. And it could be wrong, right? It can be completely off base, but you know, Mookie Betts, for whatever reason, I'm just not catching myself clicking on him a lot, or maybe I'm just not in a position where I'm drafting him. But a lot of times when I'm staring at, say, a Soto, Juan Soto versus a Mookie Betts at, say, pick 10 or 11, I'm usually going in the direction of Juan Soto for whatever reason. And obviously looking at their numbers last season, if we were to just look at that alone, you'd say, hey, why, you know, why would you do that? But obviously there's a longer track record, you know, many years of this and age, injury history and certain, you know, team context are good in both cases, but just certain things that, I don't know, just kind of have me leaning towards, towards Juan Soto. You know, Mookie Betts, you know, he's still great, but obviously, I don't know, just have this feeling that the Dodgers are just not going to be as good. And even there, right, could be splitting hairs. So, okay, maybe instead of 117 runs, he gets 110 or 105. Still, maybe can easily earn that first-round value. But, yeah, he did turn 30, struggled a little bit down the stretch. I think he hit 222 in that final month of the season. Power waned a little bit. And, you know, though he ran and stole five bases in August, he really hasn't attempted more than 15 bags in quite a while. So, for whatever reason, and you know, I feel like I do know my Dodgers well, and I'm not saying Mookie Betts is going to be a failure, but he's just the one guy I'm kind of off. You know, Kyle Tucker, it's really funny how much of some people are just taking him no matter what. It's like, hey, I love Kyle Tucker, he's my guy at the sixth pick, no problem with it. Doesn't matter where he hits, we know he's going to produce. We've seen him produce from every spot in the lineup, right? I mean, last year he started 82 games hitting fifth, 36 games hitting sixth. I think only one game second, and then he hit some third and fourth when some guys.
It does matter though, doesn't it?
there's a difference, right? Because every run, every RBI, everything, you know, matters at the end of the season. But man, he's a stud. He's 26 years old, back-to-back 30 home run seasons. He's been very good on the base paths. He's stolen 25 of 29 over the last couple seasons. You got Jose Abreu in tow now. And Michael Brantley may not even be ready for opening day. You know. So we'll see.
So there's the path, right? Brantley shoulder surgery, coming back. He's supposed to be ready for opening day, et cetera, but just the age, the barrel rate, how hard he hits the ball. At some point, Dusty's gonna have to just go with the younger guy. I would think, I mean, it is Dusty Baker, but, there's a couple other things going positive for Tucker that aren't really, I know it's simple and we're probably going to mention this quite a bit, but, you know, players that hit the ball hard, that are left-handed bats, that pull the ball at 40%+, and he is one of those. So, and he's somebody that has really good plate discipline. He has a career strikeout rate of 16.8%, and last year it was at 14.5%. And he is elite in the plate discipline, and he hits the ball really fucking hard and has elite power and speed. So he could benefit from these new shift rules, the new pickoff rule, the new pitch clock rule, the bigger base. And he's, you know, he's still just really, really young, and he's playing on one of the best teams. So I think if he does end up getting that two spot and he does stick there, he could end up being the number one player overall in fantasy baseball. It would not shock me.
Yeah, and of course, a case can be made also for his teammate Jordan Alvarez going ahead of him. I know in certain formats, like, for example, in the 12-team OCs, right? I think I probably have Jordan pretty right up there, because I do think he can have that monster season. Maybe not quite what we saw Judge do last year, because no one is really going to do something like that with such a huge differential from the rest of the player pool. But Jordan Alvarez is, you know, absolutely phenomenal. He's a guy that can hit 50 home runs with a 320 average when healthy. Anything is possible, but you just kind of know you're going to get that zero in stolen bases. And so you have to plan ahead when you're doing something like that. So like all these guys, I did want to mention real quick on Aaron Judge. I mean, obviously everyone knows what an amazing season he has, but I was just kind of looking around at, you know, what Rudy Gamble put together there with the historical player radar over on Razzball, and interesting how they basically tabulate dollars earned per season since basically the beginning of 1900, so 1903. And Aaron Judge is the highest rated guy of all time. I think like a little bit over Ty Cobb from, I forgot the year, but yeah. So, I mean, you think about those Barry Bonds seasons and some of the, you know, the monster seasons in baseball, even in our lifetime, a lot of those have come when other players have been producing, right? You have the Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa years. You have, you know, Albert Pujols, Miggy, you know, Jeff Bagwell, like all these guys over the years that are, you know, there's always that top tier that are also that were hitting 40 home runs and getting things done. This was really different this year. That differential between Judge and like the next best guy and just about everything was massive. And it really makes me think, like, you know, why isn't he, just because he doesn't steal, like say he pulls back from whatever 16 bags this year to like eight or even two. If he just, if he's somebody we think can hit like 55 plus homers again, 130, 120, like why isn't he the guy, right? Like everything in his numbers, everything in his stats, like everything that we saw last year was just so much better than everyone. Like, for example, a 26.5% barrel rate, like holy crap, right? It was basically, that number is more than double the batters that are 15th overall in the league of hundreds of players. That's like Willy Adames. He was at 13%, but the differential is just crazy in every aspect. So, I mean, why are we not clicking Judge at number one?
It's almost like, why are we not drafting LaDainian Tomlinson after he just had his best season ever, 1-1, right? That's kind of the same thing here. So the reason why is people are going to regress back the stolen bases, career high 16 stolen bases. Previously, he had six in 2021. You know, before that, the injuries were there, right? So in 2020, we had the shortened season. 2019, 2018, injuries started cropping up. Everyone started to ding him because of the size, the injuries, he can't stay on the field, etc. And then it all started to come together. Now people don't want to buy off people. When somebody has a career high, they're like, well, that's it. I can't pay for that again. He's not going to repeat that. He won't do it. But even if you regress back 62 home runs to 52 home runs and his 264 counting stats, which is just, that's absurd. I don't know, man. You'd have to dial back his stats quite a bit to say that he's really not worth even the second overall pick. I don't know. I probably should have a team or two with him. I'd probably feel stupid again at the end of the season if I didn't have any Aaron Judge. Health really shouldn't be the concern at this point. He's only 31 years old. I still think that's okay. And we haven't really seen anything since the shortened 2020 season where he missed time with the calf twice. So he missed about half the season with the calf injury. Before that, it was the oblique. He's had a wrist and an oblique before, but these things are in the rear view mirror. And I think that that's maybe just somewhere in the back of people's heads, that plus, you know, decreasing the stolen bases. But like I said, the most impressive thing to me is the 311 average. Actually, it's, you know, we don't really even talk about that or like the 264 counting stats. Like, sure, the 62 home runs is really cool, but damn, dude, $56 is what I'm looking at from Baseball HQ. And that's just,
yeah. And it was like 62 or something in Razzball. I mean, he's the best hitter in baseball. He's the best, probably the best fantasy pick. So I don't know why. I mean, I just joined the 1K DC. I finally gave in. I wasn't going to do it, but I just wanted to do one more DC. I wanted to do a really meaningful one. So I joined the one that Phil Dussault is in and Matt Modica and some other folks. And I drew put down the number four pick, KDS, and I want to Judge. This is the team that I want to Judge for, or would just be happy whoever fell to me. But Judge went third. So I ended up with Julio Rodriguez, which I'm absolutely fine with. He'll be great. Not too worried about it. But yeah, I mean, then I'm thinking like, man, if I really want to Judge, then if I really, really want to Judge, I should have just set the one. But I want to have a little bit of that flexibility in the second round and not just pick whatever's, you know, left at the table there. But enough for the first round. Let's talk about round two, or the tier two, which are guys that go between 30 and 60 overall. This is... actually, one of these guys goes right before that, and that's Michael Harris II, the National League Rookie of the Year last season, outfielder for the Braves. I've got him a little bit lower in my rankings. We've talked about it ad nauseum. But this is just a group, just in general. I don't know. I'm not particularly shopping in this area. So it's Michael Harris II. It's Dalton Varsho, catcher eligible, who we talked about a couple weeks ago. Luis Robert Jr., who's officially junior today. Randy Arozarena, Cedric Mullins and Kyle Schwarber, guys that go 30 to 60. I'm not really shopping in this range for whatever reason. They all have their pluses, but also I don't see much difference, to be honest, outside of the obvious benefit with stolen bases with these guys. I don't see much difference between this tier and the next tier of guys that we'll talk about in a bit. And to top it off, this is mostly a range that I'm shopping for other categories or for other positions. For example, this is a great place to pick up starting pitchers. This is a good place for that bulk of, you know, the remainder of the tier one closers. So that's my two cents sort of kicking off this tier.
Yeah, you're getting your first closer if you're wanting to pony up for that tier right after Emmanuel Clase and Edwin Diaz / Josh Hader. You might be looking at your SP1 or SP2, which should probably be a little bit more important than worrying about some of these stolen bases. So Dalton Varsho, I kind of want to exclude here as an outfielder, so we'll do that. And then outside of Kyle Schwarber, who has the most power by far out of this group, the rest is being pushed up because of speed, right? And then Luis Robert, or Robert, when he said that he was going by Junior, did he say what he wants his last name to be finally again?
Oh, I think we handled that end of last year with, I forgot who was on our pod, but it's Robert.
Okay.
It is good. Robert.
Okay. Let's just leave it at that. Okay. So Luis Robert Junior, he's sort of the, you're supposed to be able to do it all, right? The speed, the power, great contact, etc. We're starting to see injuries pile up with him. And earlier on in draft season, I was kind of giddy about getting him in the third round. And now I'm just somewhat becoming a little bit more tepid just because of, like we mentioned, what we might be looking for in regards to pitching there. But overall, this whole tier, I don't think I'll have much moving forward. And I would like to highlight Michael Harris real quick. We've spoken about him a couple of times on the podcast, but we really haven't gotten into why. And a friend of the pod, Rudy Gamble, reached out to us and from Razzball and asked us why. And so I kind of want to brush up on some of the flaws that I highlighted in Michael Harris. So he had really bad plate discipline, which is something that just, for me, that steers me near the, well, it's a red flashing light, right? And then for me, I don't also like to prioritize, I don't evaluate speed as much as I should. I'll admit that, but just my evaluations just don't push the needle like they should for the most part. A flaw in my end, but that is what it is for me. So his O swing, that was 41.7%, ranked 12th for hitters with a minimum of 400 plate appearances. That was just behind Harold Castro of the Detroit Tigers. And then he hits the ball into the ground far too much. He had a 56.2% ground ball rate, and that came with a 22.9% home run to fly ball rate and a 4.2 launch angle. So if somebody's going to hit the ball into the ground that often, you're likely never going to see a 20%+ home run to fly ball rate, especially with a launch angle that low. And then people could say like, well, the batting average and some things could regress because of the shift, et cetera. Well, he was already really lucky in regards to hitting into the shift or when there was a shift on for him as a left-handed hitter. He hit 402 into the shift. So I'm not sure how much we could say that he's going to benefit from that. And then on top of that, I'm rather certain that he doesn't hit second or at the top of the Atlanta Braves lineup against left-handed pitching, albeit it is the weak side of a platoon. It is a very, very bad part of his game, at least what we saw last year. So if we're going to bake in all the good things, we need to bake in the bad things as well. So against left-handed pitchers last year, 30%+K, 238 average, and that was a 238 average with a 337 BABIP. He only had a 284 OBP, 365 slug, 649 OPS with a 127 ISO, 80 WRC plus. And then against lefties, that ground ball rate went up to 69%, which is not nice. So, yeah, man, I will not have any Michael Harrison. I honestly don't even know how far he could fall because there's starting pitchers in round three, round four, and even round five that I would just draft over him. So I could be wrong. I've been wrong plenty of times. But yeah, for me, just those things I mentioned, just I can't pay that price.
And I don't think anyone is saying that he's just going to be a bust and that it's just a, you know, sort of a,
right.
You know, he's not, you know, aha, take on me. for a lot of you old folks listening. You know, it's not just a this 1 year wonder just comes in and mashes and wins the NL Rookie of the Year and just, you know, falls out of the league. No, he's great. He'll be a stud, but he was definitely he definitely just kind of was riding the Lightning last year with this offense. It's just everything was clicking. He was just hitting really well, even producing from the ninth spot. I mean, some people make fun of me when I say, but like hitting is contagious. The team is hitting well, and everything just kind of going for them. It feeds off onto you know, other players on the team hit off feed off of it. Not everyone's always hot at the same time, but you know, if that distribution of hotness is kind of rolling its way through the lineup at different periods of time, I mean, that's how, you know, team can win 100 plus games, especially with a group of talented guys like this. But yeah, I mean, he hit .297 when his X batting average was like in the 260s. You know, slugging was 100 more than his expected, right? It's none of this is predictive for next season, but it's just a lot of things. Everything just went actually absolutely beautifully and perfectly. And so for me, listen, just the way that things pop out for my projections, which are reasonable. They're not that far off from other projections, but just the way it pops off, it ends up being that he is not a second round guy, at least to me. And that's just why I'm just not going to take him there. Other guys in that range, you know, Randy Arozarena, he had that big playoff run a few years ago where he mashed all those home runs. But outside of that, he's just not been a power bat. You know, he's a low 20 homers guy, but he's an 8% barrel guy. Had some rough stretches with stolen bases last year. He did not have a very good success rate. And also I really think that with a lot of those guys that have been stealing 5 to 10 bases, you bump everyone up a little bit. Stolen bases will be less scarce of a commodity. Somebody that can steal 30 bases like Randy Arozarena may not be worth it, especially if he's going to end up hitting .230. And that's another thing. I don't really want a guy that's been basically is always outperforming his expected batting average. And you know, I just don't want to be caught with a third round pick, fourth round pick with a guy that's going to hit .220, .230 in a season. So just a couple of reasons I'm out with him. And then finally, just, you know, real quick on Kyle Schwarber. Listen, man, I picked him for the NL home run bet last year before the season. He pulled it off. It was a miracle because he stayed healthy all year. Every day I was like, man, one of these days he's going to get hurt, man. Please no. But he got it done. But everything just went perfectly for him last year. And so people are paying up for that big year. But again, this is another guy that, yeah, sure, he can hit 35, 40, 45 home runs with ease. But it's really tough for me at least, to stomach a batting average that early that can sink me, right? Because later on at some point, I'll be like, oh, I want some power. Let me look at a Matt Chapman. Let me look at a Jorge Soler. And I just will not be able to take those guys because I have guys like Schwarber and other players on my team that are already soaking up and lowering my batting average with my early round picks. So I really don't want to go in that direction.
So things could get better for Kyle Schwarber, I think, at least. He does pull the ball quite a bit, career 44% pull rate, and he hits the shit out of the ball. So last year, .286 ISO. The year before that was a .288 ISO. The team context, still good. I know that they lost Bryce Harper, but hey, they brought in Trey Turner. So, and we've mentioned before that there could be some more improvements with the youth movement there with Alec Bohm, potentially Brandon Marshall, we'll talk about Bryson Stott, et cetera. So I'm not completely out on Kyle Schwarber if I can get him in the fifth round. That is, if I do have a specific build going into the fifth round. We are currently in a 400 DC, and I drafted Kyle Schwarber in the fifth round, but that was after starting with Trey Turner, who has a very stable, or we'll call it well-balanced or above average speed and contact, floor and slash ceiling. And then I pounded pitching with Emmanuel Clase, Carlos Rodon, and Kevin Gausman. So then I wanted, you know, that elite power. So I think that the batting average could go up with Kyle Schwarber. And if we do give him 5 to 10 more hits, and I think that could even be on the lower end with his .240 BABIP that he had last year. So the BABIP was well below average. He hits the ball really hard. He pulls the ball 44% of the time. I think things could align again for him to potentially pay off a fifth round price. Last year, looking at Baseball HQ, $35, and I wouldn't be shocked if he brought in 25 plus, 25 to 30, and potentially even more than that if things do click. And in the fifth round, that's still plenty good. So, yeah, I'm fine with Kyle Schwarber. Before we move on real quick, though, Arozarena has bad contact skills as well. I know you mentioned the stolen base success rate's really bad. It's been 68 in the low 70s over the last 2 years, percentage-wise. But on top of that, team contact still isn't that great. Park factor's still not that great. And we are really, really, really paying for that speed at this price. So I don't see myself having much of him either.
Fair. All right. Next tier is, we'll start off, first of all, one guy that is not in the group named above, but he should be, right? There's really no reason for it. Just the way that at least the VDP lined up. But Adolis Garcia, cleanup man for the Rangers, he goes higher in drafts. He goes in the Schwarber Mullins range. I just have him just a step below. I guess that might mean that I may not end up with a lot of shares. But what's your feel on him this season and just kind of how he's produced? Have you landed on any this season?
I haven't and I won't. And like I said earlier, I've been wrong before. I was wrong on him last year, and I think I'm willing to be wrong on him again. He did decrease his strikeout rate overall, but it's still really bad at 28%. His career strikeout rate's basically at 30%. I'm not going to be able to live with things like that when you're swinging out of the his O swing rate got worse last year at 40.3%. That's just really, really bad. He's not even average at zone contact rate. His contact rate itself career wise is 68%, which was right in line the last 2 years. This is just, again, I know I'm going to say a lot of the same things, but swinging strike rate, 16.7%. He's bad. He's not a good hitter. He swings far too often at balls outside the zone. And when these things go wrong and things aren't clicking, like we talked about Kyle Schwarber and potentially those things going well again, you could end up falling in the lineup, losing your job. I just think that there's a lot of volatility in this profile, and it's way too risky for me, and I will not have any. And I know that he put together things outside of the speed. So it's not just the speed that's pushing him to where he's at, but there's plenty that could go wrong, and I don't want to be a part of that.
Yeah. Play discipline as well. I'm sure you mentioned it, but 30% strikeout rate as well. It feels like he belongs a little bit more so in this range, because to me, I understand Eloy Jimenez, for example, does not steal bases. He's not been able to stay healthy. But to me, just because Adolis Garcia has compiled 600 plus plate appearances and has been productive the last two seasons, yeah, I'm sure. I mean, yes, track record matters, but that doesn't necessarily, is not enough for me to want to click on him over Eloy Jimenez personally. And then just in general, I mean, other guys in this range just, yeah, makes me think I don't think I'm going to be shopping much here either. So this is in the 60 to 90 rounds, 5 to 6 of 15 teamers. So we already mentioned Adolis Garcia, Eloy Jimenez. You've got Corbin Carroll, the rookie. You got old men George Springer and Starling Marte. You got Brian Reynolds stuck in Pittsburgh. No offense, people from Pittsburgh, just talking about the baseball team. Teoscar Hernandez. So this group, again, I'm not catching myself landing on a lot of these guys. I am enticed by Corbin Carroll. I think everybody is. But what would it take for you? I don't know if you've already been buying. You know, I, for example, have a Corbin Carroll share. I forgot what it was, maybe a month ago, where I got him in the seventh round. So it was like pick 90-something, and it was like way past his ADP. I was like, all right, let's pounce here. But I've seen him go as high as the fourth round. What would it take to see? What do you need to see in spring to really be into Carroll? And will there be some helium on him so high that it'll be like, you know, I'm just not going to do it. It's not worth it to me. Like, I understand he might be the fastest player in baseball, but like, you know, I'm not into it.
So what I would want to see to buy in, and the unfortunate part is if I do see these things, he's going to cost even more, and then he's going to end up costing it probably more than I'm going to be willing to pay, even if I do like what I see. So I have concerns about power. I'm not necessarily confident that he is going to be this So first we need to look into the projections, and then I'll also get into what I need to see in spring training. So I want to see him hit the ball hard. I want to see where he's hitting at in the lineup, where the Diamondbacks giving him that burn, and how he looks in the box, how he's hitting the ball. So he did have a 27% strikeout rate in 115 plate appearances last year. And there are some things that can become sticky in spring training when you do look at strikeout rates for batters. So that's something I would be interested in as well. So where he's hitting at, is he swinging and missing a lot? And then how is he hitting the ball? And is he, you know, in regards to how hard he's hitting it. If we do see these things, it's going to be similar to kind of the narrative of Julio Rodriguez, right? It's going to be kind of the same thing. The Mariners are playing him a lot. He's hitting the ball hard. He looks great. He's fucking flying around all the bases. Like, we got to bump this guy up. The difference with Julio Rodriguez, and we can even say Bobby Witt, is these guys, and well, Julio Rodriguez, I'll use as the example because he's an outfielder, specifically, is that where I think I first drafted Julio Rodriguez, maybe round 19, round 18, early 20s. And then it was round 15 and then round 13. And then where did it end up in the main event, Vlad? I don't remember really. It was fourth or fifth round, something like that.
Yes.
Okay.
There were some cases he went in the third.
So we're already kind of even keel with where we're seeing him at right now. So looking at just the last 2 weeks, I'm seeing an ADP of 67. So fifth round pick. Now we are seeing him hit at the top of the lineup. We are seeing him hit the ball hard. He's not striking out a lot. Oh man. Fourth round, third round. One of my flaws, I did miss out on Julio Rodriguez come main event. I did miss out on Bobby Witt. I'm not my type of the way I build my teams. I'm not willing to usually take on that much uncertainty, and uncertainty I mean by I haven't seen enough plate appearances in the major leagues for me to buy in at this early draft capital, and it doesn't work out at times. And for Corbin Carroll, if he ends up going in this, he's already in this range, and if he goes up even further, he could end up paying it off. I'm not going to doubt that, but I do have concerns and uncertainties. I don't see how he goes lower, right? If he's in and out of the lineup, he's looking struggling and just looks weak, and they're like, well, he's going back down to the minors, and okay, then story's over. But on the other side of things, if he does look good, let's just say, then maybe he should be going over Randy Arozarena and Michael Harris, right? That's the other side of that coin for him, is if he is the real deal, let's say like a Julio Rodriguez, but with much less power, I would say, he should be going ahead of Michael Harris. I will say that. But for me, I likely won't have any Corbin Carroll either.
And I think he seemed to be a better power guy in prospect wise in the minors prior to
really good parks too, by the way. And he's in a bad home run park now. So
yeah. And basically it was prior to his shoulder surgery in hurting his shoulder in 2021. So I think that's one of the things, but sprint speed off the chains, obviously there's more to sprint speed. There's more to stolen base, getting stolen bases successfully than just the sprint speed, but obviously that helps. So Corbin Carroll, we're going to see some helium there. Brian Reynolds, man, I'm kind of thinking if I'm almost hoping, you almost have to think that he gets traded at some point. And obviously there are no guarantees, but there's been a lot of whispers over the last year. So I think you could almost even consider that a little bit when you're drafting. That you might get a little extra, a little bit more than you expected out of him.
You mentioned that you don't really like this tier. I kind of want to rebuttal that by saying I do like it. I don't like Teoscar Hernandez like I thought I did after further review, right? I have one share of him, and I think that'll probably be my last. I'm going to kind of go out on a limb and say that he's one that falls a little bit here. He'll sort of dip in ADP. We could potentially see some of these players in the next tier, like Tyler O'Neill, who we'll get into, say a Suzuki. I think these guys could potentially even surpass Teoscar Hernandez. Really bad park factor shift for home runs. The team context is it's definitely not as good as the Blue Jays by any means. And then age and then some of his plate discipline profiles are kind of concerning as well. So the guy that I actually like is George Springer. He's rising though. Initially, if you look back at ADP from, even mid-January to late January. And then if you wanted to stretch that back for a full month from January, just the full month of January, George Springer was going before, or I'm sorry, after Eloy Jimenez, Teoscar Hernandez, and Starling Marte. And since then, over the last 2 weeks, George Springer has now surpassed all of those guys. And now he's the guy that's going just after Adelis Garcia and Corbin Carroll. So he's coming off of a procedure this offseason, Springer, that is with the bone spurs being removed. He's already swinging the bat. There were some videos of him today. Some beat reporters also talked to him, and he said that he's feeling great. He repeated that multiple times. The team context is awesome. They did some park, changes that could potentially be positive and negative, I guess. There were some reports, but overall it should be beneficial for the hitters. And Springer is just flat out good, dude. And I even if he doesn't give me 14 stolen bases, I'm not really expecting that. But you did mention players with, you know, that not elite, you know, the 90th percentile speed, even 80th or even 70th percentile. But some players just simply know how to steal bases. George Springer seemed to want to do that last year, and he seemed to figure it out again with 14 stolen bases. Bo Bichette's already gone on the record this offseason saying that he wants to be more aggressive, and there's other players on the team that are wanting to be more aggressive in regards to stealing bases with the Blue Jays, and they're figuring out ways to how to take advantage of that. And George Springer does have the baseball IQ to do that, similar to Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman. If you look at their sprint speeds, it's not really flattering either, but look at what they do. They steal double digit stolen bases. So George Springer has elite power and, you know, the per plate appearance and team context, a potential slight upgrade in park factor, and the health, right? Yeah, he hasn't stayed healthy throughout his career, but I think with the DH in tow a little bit more this year for him, we could see more plate appearances. And if we do, he certainly can pay off this price. And then on top of that, last year, $26 what he earned. So looking at Baseball HQ, I like Springer. But the only thing is the market's liking him now, right? So I don't know. Usually there's a little tug back and forth.
He's amazing. I think per plate appearance, he's one of the best hitters, right? I mean, if you know you get 150 plus games out of him, you know that this is a guy that can return second, third round value. We saw what Marcus Semien did in the spot a couple years ago. Leadoff man there is a precious, precious spot, and he still has great power. He's phenomenal. It's just the age, really injury history, only thing I worry about. Other than that, I think he's great. I could still end up with some. The tier four guys, round 7 through 10, This is the range I want to go shopping in. This is 91 through 150. So these are almost like the middle rounds in 12 teamers, but it's round 7 through 10 in 15 teamers. And I don't know, it's a lot of gold here. There's also a lot of traps as well, potentially. Just guys that that carrot is dangling. These guys that just they mash. You know that if they do play a full season, if they somehow finally stay healthy, just everything will go right. One of those guys is Tyler O'Neill. We saw that a couple of years ago. We'll talk about him probably all
we
all
know season. You like Tyler O'Neill.
We'll track him carefully. You got obviously Giancarlo Stanton. He's a little bit lower in that tier. He's going closer to like 140, 150 overall, but obviously we know his tenuous injury history. And then of course, Byron Buxton. I mean, you know, you get a full season out of Byron Buxton, you're probably crushing it, but you can't really take many of these guys. So that's the one thing to be wary of. If you like, you already have a Tatis or a Trout or a Luis Robert Jr., or Eloy Jimenez, you can't really shop in that range. You really need to start to go for like, you know, the Anthony Santanders of the world. You need to sort of mix those in. But I like this range. You know, obviously you got Seiya Suzuki there, Tyler Ward and all of his helium, Stephen Kwan, who I'm a big fan of as well. You got potential bounce back with Chris Bryant. You got old man Christian Yelich, who nobody seems to care about anymore, who I think has a little bit left. Nick Castellanos, long and forgotten about. And then big bopper Hunter Renfro. A lot of really good bats in this range. And this is an area I want to go shopping in. I could see many of these guys outproducing guys in the second and third tier. I just recognize that a lot of them don't come with the stolen bases. But the stolen bases are going to be a whole new thing, whole new Wild West. So, Let's jump in. Let's talk. We still have about five more tiers to go. We'll try to get this done in the next 25 minutes. But But yeah, like, yeah. Where do you start? With all this gorgeousness?
Well, we got to start where we disagree. And you said that you like Stephen Kwan, and I'm an emphatic that I do not. I don't like him, and I don't like Jake McCarthy for sure. Both of these guys are being clumped into this range again because of speed. Stephen Kwan, albeit we do know that he's going to be the leadoff hitter, so I will give him that. Some people could say that the shift is going to help him because he's a left-handed hitter, but it really might not because he sprays the ball everywhere, and he is a samurai when it comes to using the bat. He has really good plate discipline and contact skills, etc. However, he does not hit the ball hard at all, and he doesn't barrel it up at all. So he has a 1.4% barrel rate and a 20.8% hard hit rate. The 6 home runs that he hit last year could potentially be a career high with a 101 ISO. So for me, he's not going to be giving you much there. He's definitely well below average in power. He's going to be well below average hitting leadoff for the Cleveland Guardians because the bottom half of that lineup is piss poor. So I just don't like the profile there. I think he's shout out to guys that have great contact and have the average that he could have, but it's just too expensive for me. We're paying for 20 stolen bases, and I'm going to just try and piece together my guys elsewhere. Jake McCarthy, there's a crowded outfield there. Again, he doesn't hit the ball hard, a little bit harder than Stephen Kwan. I'll have to pull up his data here, but it's kind of similar. But with him, he doesn't have a certain leadoff role. We mentioned Corbin Carroll earlier. There's other outfielders in that, you know, they brought in Lourdes Gurriel Jr. And then they also have Alec Thomas. So I just think that there's some things that could go wrong with him as well. Let's see, 143 ISO with a 4.8% barrel rate. These profiles just don't do it for me, dude. Guys that aren't hitting the ball hard, and that are getting priced up for speed. So again, he's not somebody that hits, he doesn't hit the ball hard, and he's a lefty that doesn't pull the ball as often as these other guys. So how much more can we factor in like a bump in batting average for that? And he's coming off of a 349 BABIP. So I'm out on Jake McCarthy as well. The guys that I do like.
Real quick, because I want to touch on Kwan McCarthy, please, before I forget about him. I'm with you on McCarthy. It's hard for me to justify it at that point. I don't know if there's enough of a track record. I understand he's crazy fast. I think some of this ADP is built in from some of these early drafts. Maybe it's just like Waxman and Fish, who drafted all those early ones, just messing with us and trying to screw with people. But anyways, for whatever reason, doesn't seem to fit there. It's just sort of an instinct thing. And maybe it's the hitting third on roster resource that might be messing with people too. I don't know if that's really a spot he's going to end up with. I think this is a much better offense this year. And you never know how that might shake out, right? Kettle Marte could get hurt. He could hit second. A lot of things can happen, but obviously somebody with his speed, you kind of want to get near the top of the lineup. Just not, I think he was another guy like Michael Harris the second that just kind of came out of the gate crushing it. And I don't think things are going to go quite that swimmingly this year. Stephen Kwan, for whatever reason, is the complete opposite for me. I think he started off rather cold, right? It was like hot, cold, hot, or hot, cold, hot, cold. But I think he's just on a different planet. I think what he is somebody that scratches an itch for you at that point in the draft. And it has to be specific, because to take him over guys that can hit 25, 30 home runs and driving in 90 runs, because there are a couple of guys there in that range, you literally need something specific. And this is a team build where you feel short on runs, batting average, and stolen bases. Because I think in those three categories, I think Stephen Kwan can be elite. Obviously, I'm with you. I don't think he's going to hit a lot of home runs. Sure, he can hit 4, maybe hits 10 in a good season, right? But he's not going to give you a lot of home runs and not a lot of RBIs. If you can factor that into your build,
he's Alex Verdugo with speed.
But I think he's more than that, because I think he can
a lot
hit
less power. No, he don't have the power, dude. And Verdugo can still hit 290 as well. On a better team.
Mm-mm. Because I think Stephen Kwan can hit like 330.
That's what
I'm talking about.
He could, but he doesn't pull the ball that. Okay. So the other thing with Kwan is, he was on a lot of league winners, one of mine included, for the Vegas team. And this guy, like you said, hot, cold, et cetera. And then it all started to click. And then Francona left him into the leadoff role. And then boom, liftoff. This was this is just an, I think it's too much of an overreaction on what he did. Even if he, what did he, let's see, let me, I want to see exactly.
Well, let's not go too down for all the players we have.
Okay. So, yeah, I don't know. I just, again, the speed profile with the lack of power concerns me. Buxton and Stanton, they have the power, right? I think the Buxton speed's gone. I think we say bye-bye. If they want to preserve him, I think we kind of saw that after the knee injury in Boston last year that completely dried up. And the Minnesota Twins do not run.
Don't run at all.
Whatsoever. I don't think that if you're drafting Buxton, you should be looking at 2021. Don't try and extrapolate your statistics with him. Look at him as a power hitter. Look at him as a younger version than Stanton right now, maybe. When he had his health concerns as well. Taylor Ward, he might have been figuring things out, right? He had the highs and the lows as well. He's going to be leading off on a really good team. He's somebody that I'm interested in. Seiya Suzuki, I think that he's somebody that could potentially get pushed up ahead of Brian Reynolds. I'm kind of interested in Seiya Suzuki as well, right? Really good plate discipline, second year in America. I won't say it's because he's coming in looking yoked and in the best shape of his life, like we saw yesterday on Twitter. And then Tyler O'Neill, real quick with your guy, dude. I'd much rather just, this might sound crazy because of the back of the baseball card, but give me Tyler O'Neill over Adelis Garcia two rounds later, whatever it is.
Yeah. I mean, you know, with O'Neill, this is silly. This may sound silly, but I'm always looking for the things that have worked for me in the last couple of years are the little outside factors, things that, how do I put this? With Vladimir Guerrero Jr., for me, the health turnaround a couple years ago when it was very clear that he started to take himself seriously. He was kind of jealous of the success Soto and Tatis and those guys were having and kind of felt out of shape. And he really took to himself with his diet and not eating all of his grandma's goodies that she would always cook for him and just taking himself seriously. And then he had that explosive season that was prior to 2021. I bought in on that. Same thing with Aaron Judge, just getting into yoga and just not as much bodybuilding. Him and Stanton kind of toned that down and they started doing more agility and lengthening things. So I don't think Tyler O'Neill is necessarily cutting out weight training. He's not all of a sudden going to become like a skinny dude and lose all of his power. I mean, after all, his dad is a former pro bodybuilder, wrestler or something like that. And O'Neill is just, he's just kind of changing some things in his, agenda, kind of incorporating more endurance, more agility, stretching, things like that. Try to reduce that stiffness, right? Because this big dude can never stay on the field. He happened to for 2021, and then also he's kind of on the bubble, right? Like it doesn't seem kind of like the Cardinals love him as much. I've heard that a lot lately. There is a lot of talent on this team, so if he's not producing, he's going to be just kind of overlooked or platooned or hitting near the bottom of the lineup. So this is his year. He needs to really get it done. He needs to get that 2021 mojo back.
The biggest thing before we move on, Vladdy, is he made massive improvements. So career high contact rate, career high in the zone contact rate, he's got a career O swing rate of 27.5%, which is like 6% above or below, however you want to look at the threshold. It's better than the league average. So he's got good plate discipline when you're looking at him. So I like what I see in the profile, and I think he's improving. And when you talked about reducing the stiffness, he also reduced his strikeout rate down to 26.9%. I like that. So, not swinging and missing as much as well. So we are seeing some maturity at the plate. He had a career low 12.7% swinging strike rate. So yeah. Hey, we like the guys with muscles, with power and speed. If you're not familiar already, I downgrade the speed and I like the power, but this guy's possessing both. But then there's usually the guys like Adelis Garcia, power and speed, but then I poo-poo on them because of the really bad plate discipline. And Tyler O'Neill is possessing the power and speed, but he's also possessing the maturation at the plate. And we are seeing him get better in multiple areas. So we could see liftoff. We could see where people were drafting him last year and what they were expecting. We could potentially see that this year.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because I think I like him ahead of ADP. I think I take enough risks throughout the draft that I don't think I'm going to go into a draft saying I must get him in my main event. I don't think that's the case unless, I mean, he could change everyone's minds just looking fantastic in spring and just crushing the ball. I mean, it really doesn't take much to move guys in spring. Like, we're just dying for it, right? Like, we're all jumping over every single little silly quote, right? Moves the market. Like, little things move the market. When we actually get baseball in the WBC and everything, we're going to have it's going to be a whole different ball game, pun intended there. So I do want to really quickly mention.
No, save that. Yeah. Save this next tier though, for the second half, because there is one player and we're not going to say the name. So in the next tier, in tier five, and I'll give you the floor real quick. You are really down on this player in VDP. You have, over a round of difference. So your delta is negative 19 in differential. And I actually have this player well above that. And I would actually take him in the top 100, let's say. So we'll save that and we'll begin our next tier, that tier next week. But there is a player that we are really different on. And I know you can see it because you have, obviously it's your data. But I did want to mention that for next week when we do talk about the second part of outfielders. Sorry, I just didn't want to forget that.
No, that's great. I have this perfect quote from a movie from the early 2000s that I just want to shout out you all, but I'll wait for next week. But yeah, that is the case. We'll kind of close things up with talking about some of the guys in the rest of this tier. But the plan here is that we're going to cover the rest of the outfielders because there are about another 75 or so. We want to definitely not feel like we rushed through it. And since we do love talking about the first round, you just kind of get into it and you're like, okay, we really need to break down all these guys. So that's what we're going to do with the second half. But real quick, one more other thing I wanted to mention was where are you at with Christian Yelich? Because
I kind of like him, I think, which sounds weird for me.
But he's still lead off, right? Dude, he's not like 30, so he's like 31.
He steals bases and he actually earns dollars, right? He returns value because he does steal bases and he is hitting at a top of an improving lineup. Can we say that? And the Brewers have their, I believe, Miller Park or Family Field or whatever it's called now. There, I know it's odd. I can't say the name of the park, but I can tell you that it is 14% above average in home run park factor. So that's where we're at on that. But
I can't keep up with the advertisers. I still call T-Mobile Safeco.
Could he? So IQ and stealing bases. He stole 19 last year. Could he potentially, with the new pickoff rule, with the new pitch clock, with Christian Yelich having that IQ, could he potentially take advantage of that again this season? I think so, right? So I don't think we should be regressing the stolen bases too much, and the projection systems aren't doing that as well. We're seeing projections from 15 to 18 stolen bases. And then when you look at how he hits the ball and where he hits the ball, he pulls the ball a decent amount. Not as much as I'd like to see, but he still hits the ball hard enough to where there could potentially be a benefit with this new shift rule. So 327 BABIP last year, 321 the year before that. That probably stays in line. So could we see a 260 season, 1520 with 160 in counting stats? If so, he's smashing this. It's boring. Dude, you can win a league with Christian Yelich's or Yelich, and you can win them with Brian Reynolds and the Jorge Polanco's of the world.
Yeah.
You don't, like, you know what I mean? Like, he's fine. He's fine.
Yeah. You don't need like just full on sex.
Tyler O'Neill's
entire.
Or Adelis Garcia.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So it is interesting on his profile how he just went from just fantasy crusher, dominator, 330 hitter to legit 250 hitter over the last couple of seasons. And the power's dropped off. Steals dropped off for a little bit, but then those came back. Walk rate's usually pretty solid. It's still been dipping a little bit, but still, this is a guy that it's above average there, has a fantastic batting eye. Just kind of lost the barrels, right? He's just not barreling the ball at a 12-14% rate like he used to. He's a 7-8% guy. That's just kind of who he is now, but he does hit the ball hard, 48% hard hit rate, hitting the ball at about 91 average exit velocity. So, I mean, I would be shocked with 20 home runs and 15 steals and 105 runs. He had 99 last season. to really, if he's healthy and he stays there, I mean, he's good to go.
Elite plate discipline from a left-handed hitter that hits the ball over 50% on the ground. You're going to get lucky this year. I just put it simple. And if Christian Yelich gets lucky and still running bases at the top of a lineup, sign me up.
And the other thing is, in drafts, it seems like he's always there if you want him. There's really nobody ever going out of the way to push him up. They're just kind of going for the new young guys or somebody that's been traded, right? Like, oh, I mean, I've seen Hunter Renfro go in drafts above him just because, hey, he plays for the Angels now. He's going to play with Mike Trout and Otani. You get extra points for that.
We mentioned Jake McCarthy. Is there anybody else that you're adamant on that you want to just not have in this area?
In this tier? You know, there are a couple of guys that I don't.
You kind of like this tier overall. I by looking, you know, at the data and the VDP.
I love this tier. I absolutely love this tier. This is where I want to shop. I do not want to take necessarily outfielders earlier. It's even a matter of, hey, if I started the draft with a stud outfielder, I got my closer, I got a few good starters, I filled a couple of the infield positions, and I'll wait and then just grab a couple of guys from this round, especially if I'm, say, at the turn and I can kind of hit a couple of these guys. So there's really a lot to like here. Chris Bryant, I mean, right? He was your boy last year. I mean, you probably would have won the overall if Chris Bryant had actually been healthy and I just hit one home run in Coors Field. I mean,
I could add Julio Rodriguez over him. Fuck.
Yeah, that's the one thing.
Looking back at who I could have had over fucking Chris Bryant. I'm done playing that game, okay? It's called suicide.
Yeah, no, Chris Bryant,
I
want to
joke about that, but you know what I mean. It's just, it's torture. It's bad. Yeah. So
Chris Bryant is going to hit second for the Rockies in a great home park. I mean, he should be fine, right?
Yeah, he should be, I guess. The issues that we have with these Rockies hitters, though, is how do you manage some of these guys on the road? And I think that we would need to see a really, really, really good Chris Bryant at home in order for us to feel okay about where he's going, especially because of some of the guys that are going around him. I'm really confident when it comes to power in, you know, Anthony Santander, even Giancarlo Stanton, they're going before him. They're both hitting in an equal spot in their lineups. Both of their lineups are better than the Rockies. And then when you take the Rockies out of Coors, man, right now, this is not the Trevor Story, Charlie Blackmon, Nolan Arenado Rockies anymore. And it's bad. I mean, they are so bad on the road that it becomes a mind game in regard, even with CJ Cron. Do I start him this week? They have, you know, they're on the road for the week. What do you do? So I don't know. He's had injuries now here and there throughout the years. And I don't like to call anybody, you know, pansies or anything, but I don't think that he's the toughest guy when it comes to, you know, playing through aches and pains and stuff like that. So I don't know. I get it. I like boring, dude. I do. And he is boring, but I do have a problem with these splits and with them going on the road. And he has health concerns. He is getting older. The team context sucks.
You know what really sucks about the team context? If you're looking at Chris Bryant, and you just think about this logically, number two hitter, he's slated to hit in between Jonathan Daza and Ryan McMahon. And then half those games on the road. Yeah, I think you just kind of sold me off of there. You're just going to drag things down. There's going to be a period of time where you're going to be looking at a Rockies lineup and playing DFS and have to think of, you're looking at the lineup and it's like Brian Severin and then Sean Bouchard and then, you know, Harold Castro and Michael Toglia in the lineup. It could get really, really nasty here.
And so, like, Nick Castellanos, I know that things are going to begin falling off sooner than later, but he did have injuries last year. So he had the strained oblique. He mentioned that obviously that harnesses any hitter. But so you miss close to a month with that. But we always – people talk about, wow, new hitter, new team, new division, there's pressure. He talked multiple times about feeling pressure. And then when Bryce Harper went down, there was even more pressure. And then there's not injuries that are listed that he did have, but he didn't miss time too because he was wanting to stay in the lineup because of this pressure. And this guy understands the game of baseball and what to do in the box. And I just think that in his second year with a little bit of relief off the pressure. And now there's Trey Turner there to take off some of that. And we've already seen time miss without Bryce Harper, so that's a little bit more familiar. I just think that I don't think we get 2021 Nick Castellanos, or we can extrapolate 2020 Nick Castellanos, but I think he can certainly outperform some of these guys. I think he'll fall too. Maybe he might fall. Some of these guys are going to drop. So some of these guys, some are going to rise and some are going to fall. Taylor Ward rising, Byron Buxton, people will start to buy in. I could see McCarthy fall. Castellanos, I can see him fall.
It's a matter of a specific, I mean, he's just one of those guys. He's not giving you anything particular, right? You're not looking to, you're not in that point in the draft. I mean, most people are like, oh, I need power. Let me look at Stanton or Santander. And you don't usually see people, or at least most people don't usually say, oh, I kind of really need runs now, right? It's usually just, it's I need batting average. I need home runs. I need speed, or I need, you know, something in pitching. But Castellanos should be strong across the board. I think you nailed it on the head. You're not going to get 2021 in Cincinnati in that great park. There's definitely, he's definitely, the death lineup is just not the same without Bryce Harper. That's just an automatic fact. Right. But it is still strong in the top half of it. And I think you can have some growth from guys like Bryson Stott and we'll see. So, but I'm
Alec
fine with
Boehm,
him.
Baby. Alec Boehm.
Alec Boehm.
Or Boehm. Boehm. I like him. I got a little man crush on him.
A guy with a name like that should be, you should have focused on being a slugger.
Yeah, just hey, good plate discipline though. Man, I am such an old guy when it comes to player evaluations.
Look at you.
So sad. So funny. It's so sad. Maybe I should get anybody that has 80th to 90th percentile speed, cross them off.
So this is perfect. I mean, we covered a good chunk of the important guys the first half of draft. So we'll cover the second half next week. We'll be back on a regularly scheduled date. So meaning next week's pod will come out on a Wednesday morning, and then we'll really start to dig into the pitchers. We'll talk about some spring training stuff. And lots to cover, so it's going to be a lot of fun. Any last thoughts here before we sign out?
I'd like for us to do at some point, a market prediction thing of risers and fallers once we start to see some of the spring training news, and right before Vegas or something like that. Maybe we can do a fun prediction, not a whole episode, but just a little segment on some risers, fallers, or some of those things. Maybe some bold predictions too. We're getting close.
Yes, it's coming soon, and WBC starting in early March. Everything's right around the corner. If you remember, February is a very, very short month. So ftnfantasy.com is the website. FTNpod is the promo code to use if you have not yet signed up. Thank you guys all so much. Wish me luck in Vegas to do some damage in this draft in the 14 teamer at the FSGAs. And thank you so much for listening. For Matty Wood, Matthew Davis, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with Matthew Davis and Vlad Sedler. Make sure to follow your hosts on Twitter at @_MattyWood_ and @RotoGut. Hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.